From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're continuing our documentary series with a film about the influence of corporate money on elections and on politicians. Kimberly Reed is a filmmaker, and she's from Montana, and that's where she chose to focus the film. Montana has this strong history of trying to keep illegal corporate influence away from the political process, so it serves as a microcosm for how this story is playing in the country. It's called Dark Money. We'll be right back.
Benjamin Franklin said, "Tell me and I forget. Teach me and I may remember. Involve me and I learn." That sums up KUER's community calendar pretty well. You'll learn new things, like how to make your own honey, or write a story, or arrange flowers. There are new events every week, and if you've got something you want to show people, you can post your own events too. Check out the community calendar under the events tab at KUER.org.
This is Radio West, I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about America's campaign finance process, which for nearly 10 years now, since the Supreme Court ruling Citizens United, has become flooded with money. And some of this money is almost impossible to follow because the names of donors are hidden, laundered really through these political action committees and nonprofit groups. It's a really complicated system, and it's not an easy story to tell. So what the filmmaker Kimberly Reed did was choose one place to center her story. Let it act as a microcosm for how this works all over the country. And she chose Montana for reasons that we'll talk about. Her film is about this money and how hard it is to trace it. It's called Dark Money, and that's the name of the film, which we're going to be screening next Wednesday night. We'll give you details about that a little bit later on the program. Today, Kimberly Reed is joining us to talk about the film, which is about, it's about transparency, it's about corruption. It's also about the importance of a free press and journalists who are willing to follow the money. Kimberly Reed directed, wrote, filmed, and produced Dark Money, which premiered earlier this year at the Sundance Film Festival. She's joining us today from the studios of NPR affiliate WBGO in Newark, New Jersey. And Kimberly Reed, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I want to begin, we'll get to how you picked Montana here in a second, but you've talked about how you, like a lot of other people, were really bothered by the Citizens United ruling. This was back in 2010, but it wasn't really until 2012, you've said, when you saw what you've described as a light at the end of the tunnel about this story. Explain what you mean.
Yeah, you know, I think it serves as a good reminder to folks just what exactly the Citizens United decision was about. And that's where, just kind of based on where the U.S. Supreme Court's jurisprudence had led it, in Citizens United, the Supreme Court found that kind of a famous phrase that you hear repeated a lot, that corporations are people and that money is tantamount to speech. So therefore, you can't limit the speech of a corporation. In other words, you can't limit the money that they spend in elections. And just the idea that we had gotten to a place, whether, you know, Supreme Court jurisprudence led us there or not, the idea that we had gotten to a place in our society where we were going to let the richest companies on the face of the earth give unlimited money to political campaigns was a scary proposition. So yes, when I heard about that in 2010, you know, you could just see a really slippery slope, and I'm very skeptical of slippery slope arguments. I think we all should be, but it didn't take much to imagine that money was going to become consolidated in the hands of just a handful of really rich people, and that is just not good at all for our democracy. And that's a democracy with a small d, right? It's just drowning out the voices of everyday citizens. And putting government in the hands of a few billionaires and millionaires. So I, you know, for a while I didn't quite know what to do about that until I was living in New York at the time. But as you said, I'm from Montana, and pay attention to the politics there and go back a lot. And I saw that Montana had a case that had the ability to challenge and perhaps overturn Citizens United. Right. And that was the real impetus for the film. It, you know, these campaign finance stories get a little complicated with people talking about money and hiding money. And after all, the way that these dark money groups work is through obfuscation, yeah. Right? Yeah. So to tell a story about obfuscation is a little bit challenging. But I saw that when Montana had this case going to the U.S. Supreme Court, that we could tell a story about money and politics, but keep it about real people, yeah. These real people that I knew and grew up with, and wrap it around, you know, the lives of everyday folks, and instead of these abstract concepts, it occurred to me that we might have the beginnings of a film.
Explain a little bit about the culture of that place, that this resistance, this aversion among Montanans to you know, corporate influence on a political process. Because we hear from, in part of the film, where we hear from Montana voters who are talking about the importance of having these laws. And these aren't just Democrats, and these aren't just liberals. And that's one thing that's kind of striking about the film, is that this is fairly bipartisan. Like, this sentiment, the culture of Montana seems to be kind of across the board.
Yeah, it's very much a bipartisan issue. I think our film is very bipartisan. I'm sure we'll talk about it later, but the kind of central question in the film is, why are one group of Republicans attacking another group of Republicans and using dark money groups to do that? Yeah. And there's a very interesting question to chase down. But you know, the case that we're talking about that was going to the U.S. Supreme Court that had the ability to overturn Citizens United was the law on the books was the Corrupt Practices Act of 1912.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact history of Utah, but in many of the Mountain West states in the early 1900s, late 1800s, there was generally a big push to rein in the control that many corporations had over state politics.
Right.
And there was kind of a wave of these anti-corruption measures, like the Corrupt Practices Act of 1912 in Montana, which was it was actually a ballot initiative that was raised by voters. And the reason for that is because the legislators who were sitting in the state capitol weren't bringing up laws that would regulate their own
right.
their own ethics and corruption. So the people did it. And a lot of that was just based on very practical experience that Montana's had watching what happened in Butte, Montana.
Yep.
At the time, it was known as the richest hill on earth. There's a bunch of copper that was pulled out of the mines in Butte, Montana. And there was a big battle over it through, you know, with a couple wealthy industrialists who came out from the East Coast and started battling it out to see who was going to control those copper mines. They were called the Copper Kings.
Yep.
And every, you know, Montana kid who goes to grade school learns about the battles of the Copper Kings, as did I. And it's not just something that you feel and process in the history books. If you drive through Montana, I think we're pretty proud of how beautiful the state is. But when you drive through Butte, Montana, all of a sudden the amount of foliage really drops off and the landscape becomes more barren. And then you come upon, it's really hard to describe without being there, but you come upon an enormous pit of toxic
of poison.
Water.
Yeah.
Which is, it's the Berkeley Pit.
Yep.
It's the largest Superfund site in America. And it's the result of open pit mining. After the pumps got shut off because the open pit mining went down beneath where the water table was. So now what we have is what used to be a big, huge open pit and is now full of water because they're not pumping the water out, mostly because they don't quite know what to do with it. So you have, water running into this pit from the spring runoff and rain. And it's now laden with a lot of toxic heavy metals. So my point in telling you about this is that, this we're not just talking about an abstract historical thing that happened 100 years ago with the Corrupt Practices Act of 1912. We're talking about what eventually, became a big pit of toxic water after, people take copper out of the side of a mountain and don't really take care of it after that's done. So, I grew up hearing about these copper kings and about the Corrupt Practices Act of 1912. And that was the case that in 2012, 100 years later, was going to the U.S. Supreme Court. It had the ability to reshape Citizens United, perhaps even repeal it. That is not what happened.
Right.
The case that Attorney General at the time, Steve Bullock, took to the U.S. Supreme Court, that case was summarily reversed. So the U.S. Supreme Court said, not going to happen this time around. And basically, forced Montana, which at the time was the only state to really resist Citizens United like this, even though half of the other states signed on with Amici briefs in support of Montana. They sent Montana back to the drawing board and said, no, you can't follow this 100-year-old law that you had that was based on your personal experience in seeing the corruption that happened when these titans, these industrialists from the East Coast came and just took over the mines, took over all of the newspapers, brazenly bribed U.S. senators, just openly, like taking out ads in their own newspapers, as a matter of fact, to say that we will pay for your vote. That this rampant corruption that Montana had gone through that resulted in the Corrupt Practices Act of 1912 was reversed, and Montana had to hew closer to the line of Citizens United, this federal statute.
Yeah. We'll fast forward now to how money is working now. This dark money is working, and it gets us to a story you tell early on in the film, a man by the name of John Ward. And we'll meet in this. I want to play this this clip. We'll talk about John Adams, an investigative reporter, and he plays a really critical part in the film. But there's something that he says early on, which seems important, that he sort of just thought this was how politics works. So I want to play this moment a clip. But tell us just quickly who John Ward is, briefly, so we can have the context here.
Yeah, John Ward was a conservative Republican who was running for the Montana State House in 2008. And he, unbeknownst to him, became the victim of a new style of attacks that was using nonprofit organizations. They registered with the IRS usually as a 501c4, mm-hmm. kind of like a C3, but a little bit different. They're 501c4. And all of a sudden, he finds himself the victim of attacks from these groups, and he has no idea who they are and what they're actually looking for in this election. He just gets attacked out of nowhere.
Yeah. We'll hear from John Ward. First, John Adams, the reporter. Here's a moment from the film Dark Money.
I remember John Ward coming in and telling me how he was attacked like this. At the time, I was thinking, well, that's politics, man. Here's a longtime conservative who runs a porta potty business. I don't think he knew at the time, I certainly didn't know, the level of coordination, that this wasn't just politics.
You got to understand, obviously, I was really pissed off.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
And voters in your district had never seen something
not,
like that.
No. This was a whole new genre of political attack to shock the public right at the last moment, to leave them like, God, we can't take it. You know, we can do better. We don't want to take a chance on this guy. You know.
And it worked. And,
right.
It worked. Explain what John was talking about, because this gets us to, we see these flyers and these mailers and how they connect John Ward to these serial killers. Talk a little bit about how that process works, how you basically dismantle a person's character in this process.
Yeah, what we see in the film is some postcards that were sent out at the very last minute before John Ward had a chance to respond, you know, like 2-3 days before the election. Voters in the district find their mailboxes full of all these completely unfounded accusations. The one we see in the film is a postcard that has a picture of John Ward and his name, and it's right next to a picture of John Wayne Gacy. Mm-hmm. And all sorts of, you know, horrendous prose about how he's a terrible serial killer. And there's this equation that's drawn between John Ward and John Wayne Gacy. And the reason for that is because John Ward was, he's Catholic. And he did not believe that the death penalty should just be taken for granted, that we had to, you know, consider his religious viewpoints when, you know, talking about the death penalty. So he, you know, voted. It wasn't even a vote on a bill. It was a vote to move a bill about the death penalty to discussion. So John Ward, all of a sudden, because he says, you know, we should have a discussion about the death penalty and the role it plays in our society, is equated with John Wayne Gacy, because, you know, John Ward believes that, you know, John Wayne Gacy is a good person and they're basically friends with each other. So when this, you know, when a completely unfounded, completely untrue accusation like that lands in mailboxes a couple of days before an election, there's not much you can do.
Yep.
And that's what happened to John, and they took him out. He lost the election. He'd been a long time representative, and you know, they took him out of the picture. And in retrospect, it became apparent that this was sort of a test driving of this technique of using a 501c4 nonprofit, blitzing folks, voters in the district, at the last minute, with these accusations and taking them out of office. And the important thing to realize is that, John Ward was in a safe district. One way or another, there was going to be a Republican in his seat. Yeah. We are not talking about an election between a Republican and a Democrat, or between this and that. We're talking about, you know, a Republican is going to take this seat. It's just a matter of which Republican is going to be in that seat. And what we found here in this this kind of technique that was being pioneered is Republicans on the far right wing of the party that were attacking John Ward because they didn't think he was pure enough to be in the party. So it's, you know, Republicans attacking other Republicans in the primary election, where not many people pay attention, in an effort to kind of purify, and I'm putting air quotes around that, to purify the party. And, you know, I can't, I don't want to draw too many connections here, but if you just think about how that process works in election after election, you're going to have a much more polarized electorate.
Yeah.
You're going to have a much more polarized legislature. And, you know, if you do that in a bunch of districts for 10 years, I think it's pretty easy to imagine how we've come to, you know, where we are right now, where politics at the national level have become really polarized as well.
Let me talk about another theme that intersects with this idea of dark money, and that's the importance of a free press. That's sort of personified in the film. He's in John Adams, this investigative reporter. He's an important, as I said, important part of the film. Let me play another moment from the film, because we need to talk about, if you're a journalist, how difficult it is to run down this money. Here's John Adams.
I don't know who they are. I don't know how to fight them. I don't know how to argue with them. I can't debate them. I can't interview them. I can't pick up the phone and say, hey, what's your interest in candidate X? Because I don't know who they are. We'll never know.
Is that true? We'll never know? I mean, how difficult is it to trace this stuff?
Well, I have to admit that there's a little bit of editing going on there, a little bit trying to set up some counter expectations, because what happens in the film is that we do indeed find out. When I was talking to John Adams in that interview, he didn't think we would ever find out who was behind some of that spending. But that's the real, you know, mystery that the film solves, is who was behind it. Yeah. And we did find out. And that's only due to some really kind of freak circumstances and kind of gobsmacking twists of fate that we end up finding out who's behind some of this. But by and large, yeah, this is how the system works, that we can't find out who's spending this money because, you know, there's just a massive loophole in the system of campaign finance that allows political operatives and politicians to take advantage of, a loophole that allows them to basically anonymize and launder the money in a way that we don't know where the money is coming from.
I'm not sure how much you want to give away about that sort of revelation and these papers that appear in Colorado. How much do you want to say about that? Because it's pretty interesting. And the revelations that what we see, how the techniques work, how these people are thinking about these strategies are pretty interesting. But I don't want to give too much away.
Yeah. I think it suffices to say that there's some wild twists and turns where there are these accidental disclosures that happen where we see how not only this one election was run against somebody like John Ward, but how a whole system of elections can be run by national organizations that handpick a slate of characters who are going to, you know, toe the line for them and vote along the lines of one particular issue, the one single issue that they're interested in, and basically install these candidates in state house legislatures so that they can change policy. And it's I don't know about you, but to me, it's really frustrating to see just a couple people who, by working anonymously, by working in the dark, can outweigh the effect of a large group of voters who are the real people who should have the power in American democracy. So to see a handful of people cheat and take that over is pretty frustrating. And that's what we saw in Montana, was that the legislators themselves were the ones who were really galled by that lack of fairness in the system. And, you know, even in a state that is probably almost as red as Utah, people mm-hmm. think about this in this red-blue spectrum. I'm mm-hmm. always trying to break that down. Some of the strongest campaign finance laws in the country were passed because of this whole story of the abuse of dark money groups and these revelations that let us see how they routinely work. We were able in Montana to to pass laws that force disclosure of these groups. That's really the key to the whole thing is disclosure. I mean, we had some accidental disclosures in that we go through in our film, and that just really shows you that when you have sunlight on these elections, when you can actually see who's behind them and what they want, you can figure out, you know, the voter is smart enough to really know what people are up to. But when the whole system is hidden, that creates a lot of problems. It creates, it just breeds corruption, and it takes democracy out of the hands of the everyday citizen.
Kimberly Reed is with us. She directed and produced the documentary film Dark Money, which premiered at the Sundance Film Festival earlier this year. You can see it next Wednesday, that's July 11th, at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. We're going to be screening it, as usual, for free. It's part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with Utah Film Center. Kimberly Reed and the reporter John Adams will be there for a Q&A, so you should join us. You can get details on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West from KUER.
Do you work for the University of Utah? Are you a public radio nerd? Then donate to KUER through payroll deduction. Decide how much of your paycheck you'd like to put toward programming like Morning Edition, 1A, and Radio West, and the university will send your generous gift to KUER. Your contribution supports factual journalism, Utah stories, and even short films. Get started with payroll deduction by looking under the support tab at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're continuing our documentary series with a film about the influence of corporate money in the Citizens United ruling on elections and on politicians. Kimberly Reed, a filmmaker from Montana, that's where she chose to focus her film. And Montana is an interesting story because it has this strong history of trying to keep illegal corporate influence away from the political process. So it serves as kind of this microcosm for how the story is playing out throughout the country, really. Her film is called Dark Money. It premiered at the Sundance Film Festival earlier this year. We're going to be screening it next Wednesday night. Kimberly Reed and John Adams will be joining us via Skype for a Q&A after that. You can get details on our website, radiowest.org. Kimberly's joining us today from the studios of NPR affiliate WBGO in Newark, New Jersey. So I want to ask you about this case that goes to the Supreme Court. Basically, the way you explain it in the film, so you have the these various, so you have the Citizens United ruling, and then Montana says, no, we want to the federal law is one thing. We want to keep our own state laws. And so they go to court to try to keep this, and this lawsuit plays out in 2011. Do you want to say something about the American Tradition Partnership? This is one of these kind of secret groups that is challenging the Montana law. This is how it gets to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, the important thing to realize is that you know, federal elections take place according to federal laws. So the presidential elections, senatorial races, take place according to federal law, but state elections take place according to state laws, and each state has different campaign finance laws, different levels of disclosure, different levels that people can make contributions under, you know, what those limits are. And what was happening with the case that went to the United States Supreme Court was Montana was saying, you know, we would like to continue following our state law for all of our elections. We've just seen that anything that happens here needs to take place according to these standards. So the U.S. Supreme Court reversed that decision. No, you have to follow Citizens United. So that has been the case for Montana's federal elections. You know, Senator John Tester is running against a candidate named Matt Rosendale under those laws right now in Montana. Mm-hmm. We see the early stages of that 2012 election in the film. But for the state elections that we cover in the film, it really started in 2010 and came to fruition in 2012. There was a group. It actually started being called Western Tradition Partnership, mm-hmm. and then changed its name after that to be called American Tradition Partnership. That technique of changing the name of the group, by the way, is a dodge that we often see with some of these groups who are many times trying to avoid detection by just changing your name. But what we saw in Montana, especially in 2010, is one organization that was essentially running the campaigns for a whole slate of candidates. Now, the important thing to know is that, you know, in Citizens United, the Supreme Court said that corporations can speak in elections. And by speak, we mean spend a lot of money. And the one thing that they can't do, everybody agrees, is that these corporations can't collaborate. They can't collude. Yeah. They can't coordinate with the candidate, right? Because that would just, you know, make for a completely corrupt system. Corporation X can say, I think we need a park built over on the other side of town, and maybe run an ad that advocates that one position. But to give money directly to a politician, that has a lot of corrupting effect. So the one thing you can't do is coordinate with a candidate. And long story short, I'll just say that our film really unpacks that whole system of how one kind of shadowy anonymous organization can work in the dark to coordinate campaigns, not just with one candidate for office, but with a whole slate.
Yeah.
And actually what we found with American Tradition Partnership, which when you look at it, looks like a front group, we figure out who's behind it. And it was a false front for a false front for a false front. Mm-hmm. And that's how a lot of this money laundering happens. And, you know, I think it's really important to realize, you know, these groups aren't hiding their influence just because, right? Like, there's a lot of money that's spent in elections that comes from people who are happy to put their name on it. They're happy to say, you know, my name is Tom Steyer and I believe in this and I'm going to put my money behind it. Or my name is Michael Bloomberg and I believe in that issue and I'm going to put my name behind it. Or even in some cases, I'm one of the Koch brothers and I want to put my name on this and I'm behind it. The Koch brothers also have a pretty vast network of dark money groups.
Yeah.
But in some cases, they're willing to put their name on some of that political spending. But when it's anonymous, when you don't know where this money is coming from, you can bet that it's because somebody is up to no good. And they don't want to have their fingerprints on what is actually going on in this campaign.
Yeah.
The most often what you find is that, you know, it's not a one-to-one equation here. This isn't always the case. But by and large, most of the negative advertising that you see is coming from a dark money group because a candidate, you know, doesn't want to be the one getting really slimy and taking out ads that are really negative and just leave a sour taste in the mouth of the viewer. that's almost always left to a dark money group, so that they won't, you know, there won't be anyone's fingerprints on it. And there's also an affiliation between issues. I think with a lot of environmental issues, where it's pretty unpopular to, you know, rip open the side of a hill, like we saw in Montana. That a lot of times you see the source of the funding obscured and hidden. You also see it with civil rights stuff, yeah. Especially LGBT rights.
There's a kind of an odd moment you chronicle in the film where that involves one of these groups, American Prosperity. This is funded by the Koch brothers. And they hold these, I'm going to put air quotes here, town hall meetings as part of the election process. But they're not really town hall meetings. They're advertised as if they were town hall meetings, but they're not really. Would you just talk a little bit about these moments in the film and where this fits in this story?
Yeah, I think what you see in the scene that you're referring to is, you know, you really see it exhibited, this kind of just skepticism of corporate money and politics that we find at a root level with a lot of Montanans. Because what happens is when the Koch Brothers Network, Americans for Prosperity, rolls into town and they advertise these town hall meetings, again with air quotes, mm-hmm. What happened was they weren't going to let any of the people at the town hall speak. They just wanted to have a lecture and run a slideshow. And the issue that they were tackling there was Medicaid expansion. And they just generally wanted to not only have a one-sided presentation about the evils of Medicaid expansion, but they also wanted to use that as an opportunity to really attack local representatives who weren't for Medicaid expansion. So they were using this as a way to get leverage and to change the votes of the local representatives.
And they didn't invite these guys to defend themselves.
Yeah, what they did is they sent out a bunch of postcards that said, come to our town hall meeting and, you know, tell Jeff Wellborn what you think about Medicaid expansion. So everybody who went to the meeting found two things. One, that they were not going to be able to tell anybody anything because they weren't going to be allowed to speak. And two, that they didn't even invite the other guy. They didn't even invite Jeff Wellborn to the discussion that they were supposedly going to have at this town hall. So the whole thing was a ruse. And actually, we depict one of those. We show what happens at one of them, where basically people just stand up and walk out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you're deceiving us. We will have none of that. And they stand up and walk out. And that didn't just happen in one town. It happened in, I think, four different cities over a couple different nights. And the same thing happened at each of them. The representatives found out that this town hall was going on. And they went to it, and they asked to stand up and speak and have a discussion, and in each of the cases, they were denied.
I want to ask about another element to this story that is former Montana Supreme Court Justice Jim Nelson is in the film. And he talks about how one of the strategies for these dark money groups is the way he puts it, is to capture the courts. Let me play this moment from the film, and we can discuss it.
The moneyed interests have already pretty much bought Congress. I think they pretty much bought the executive office, the presidency. But they can't control the government unless they get the courts. They've got the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court already, but the courts that they really need to get are the state appellate courts, because that's the place where the rubber meets the road in terms of people's rights being enforced, judgments being rendered against corporations that abuse people's rights, that pollute the environment. Those kinds of decisions are made in the Supreme Courts of the states. The big money people know that unless they can get control of those courts, economic domination over those judges is what we're talking about, unless they can essentially buy a seat on the Supreme Court, they can't control those courts.
So is this a particular strategy of some of these groups, is to influence these the appointment of these appellate court judges, I guess?
Yeah, that's right. Different states have different ways to get judges into office and keep them there.
Yeah.
Some states have a system whereby the judges are appointed to the state Supreme Court. Some are elected. Some are appointed and then stand for retention elections. But what you find in any of the cases where there's an election for judges is that, you know, I think it's particularly scary to think of the influence that money, especially anonymous money, has in these state Supreme Court races. What we find is there's a study done by the Brennan Center for Justice, is that when judges know that they're going to stand for election, especially since Citizens United, when there's a lot more money in those elections, and it's, sometimes that money is anonymous, what you find is that judges rule differently because they start to factor in the money. They start to factor in, oh boy, what if I decide and, you know, let this person out on parole and something happens? So you find that you know, if they start to imagine how their ruling is going to end up on a dishonest postcard that's going to hit their mailbox a year from now, it has a big impact on the way that the courts operate. And another really important thing to keep in mind is that, you know, there are a lot of cases where judges are ruling on a case or asked to sit in on a case where they're talking about a company, a corporation. And if a judge has any sort of economic affiliation with that corporation, they should recuse themselves. When you have a bunch of dark money being spent, you don't know where it's coming from. And maybe the only people who know where the money is coming from is the dark money group and the judge. Like, how can a judge recuse themselves from a case involving a dark money group when we don't know where the money is coming from?
Yeah.
So a good case study for this is the state of Wisconsin. What happens when dark money kind of hits all of the three branches of government? I mean, for the most part in our film, we're talking about dark money's impact on the legislative branch. And there's certainly plenty of examples of you know, the role of anonymous money in executive branches at the state level and, you know, with the governor's races. But when dark money has an influence on the courts as well, what you find is that nobody is going to enforce each other. Hmm. Like, what happened in Wisconsin was that the same dark money group that played in the reelection of Scott Walker and got state legislators elected into the state capitol, that same dark money group was playing in the elections for state Supreme Court justices. So when they got in trouble and cases went to the state Supreme Court, guess which way the judges ruled, having had their campaigns supported by the same dark money group that they were supposed to hold accountable. It becomes pernicious.
Let's talk about what becomes a kind of an underlying theme, the importance, we mentioned this a bit earlier, but the importance of the free press and what's happening, where you have Lee Newspapers, which has been involved in Montana for decades and decades, and they're struggling now. They decide to shutter their state bureau. So we hear from the bureau chief there, Chuck Johnson. And explain what happens, because you've got this convergence, you've got this emergence of money, the emergence of these C4 groups, and then the press being challenged, journalists being challenged. Talk a little bit about this part.
Yeah, in addition to, you know, I think a broad interest in this issue of corrupt money in politics that was coming from the average citizen, there were a lot of reporters that were really following that story. And as you said, Chuck Johnson and another guy named Mike Dennison were the main State House reporters for lead newspapers. And then the other big paper in the state is the Great Falls Tribune, which is where John Adams was working. It's a Gannett paper. And, you know, I think a lot of us are aware that there's been a lot of economic pressure and restructuring of the newspaper industry, you know, in basically the last decade. And everybody's trying to figure out how that business model works. And what happened in Montana was really unfortunate because after a, you know, years of following these issues and writing for them and having front page story after front page story above the fold about money and politics and how these dark money groups were working, we had pretty effective disclosure of what was going on because we had the Fourth Estate, you know, the free press following these stories and exposing things. But one of the things that happens over the course of the film, which takes place over three election cycles or 6 years, right? What we saw in 2015 is in the space of a couple weeks, the State House Bureau for both Lee newspapers and the Gannett paper were shut down.
Yeah.
So suddenly overnight, there was no State House coverage. It is pretty scary. The only way that you can track this, the only way that you can follow these dodgy groups is through really diligent watchdog reporting, and then you lose it overnight. So there's some twists and turns that happen in the film, and I'm not going to go into all of them, but I think what you see is the person who has been our narrator, John Adams, becomes a real hero in my book in the way that he, you know, struggles and claws his way back into a position where he can keep following these different groups because he's so passionate about following this money in politics.
Almost as hard as following money in politics is following John Adams and when he decides to shave his beard and cut his hair. I mean, this must have been an amazing challenge for an editor trying to keep track of when John decides to grow a beard or not. I mean, it was easy enough, but it's pretty interesting to see how he progresses throughout the film.
There were John has very creative facial hair, and he also has a dog.
Yeah.
And there was a certain point, you know, early on in the editing of the film, you show it to audiences, and we were realizing that there was a lot of confusion, and people weren't recognizing our main character because his facial hair was changing so much. But then we realized that, wait, they always recognize the dog. So if you look at the film again, I think you'll notice that there's a lot of shots of the dog just before you see John.
Yeah, smart. That's so smart. Oh, very clever.
He becomes the guy with the dog.
Yeah. Let me ask you this finally, about a minute left or so. There's this question that one of the characters in the film, a man by the name of Gene Gerussi, special attorney general in Montana, he's conducting this investigation in this case that you lay out. He asks these questions. Do we care enough to demand that politicians comply with campaign laws? And then also, are we then brave enough to hold these politicians accountable if they're not complying with these laws? John Adams also says this is the proving ground for the American experiment. And I'm wondering, it seems like you hear these stories. There are moments when you hear about Montana citizens rallying for this disclosure and you think, oh, that's a good thing. And then you hear other stories where it makes you think, no, we're headed in another direction. Where do you think, finally, this trend is headed?
Well, you know, there's ever since Citizens United was passed, there is broad, and I'm talking like 75-80% of the American public, broad support that says we recognize that our system of money and politics is completely busted and we need to do something about it. in the 2016 elections, all of the major candidates basically ran on the same platform of reforming our campaign finance system. That is not happening now. Far from it. Everybody was saying that. Everybody was running on it because I think that there is really broad-based support for that. So I think that the way that this is going to work is like a lot of other social movements where the American public gets it, but elected officials sometimes don't, where what we're going to have is, you know, city council resolution after city council resolution to change the role of money in politics. We're going to see school board after school board and state after state, and it's going to become a broad-based reform that moves from the grassroots up instead of from the top down.
Kimberly Reed, her documentary is called Dark Money, which you can see next Wednesday night. That's July 11th at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. Kimberly and the reporter John Adams we were talking about, they'll be joining us via Skype for a Q&A after the film. You can get details about all of it on our website, radiowest.org. Kimberly Reed, thank you very much. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Sounds good.
Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.